This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Our critic at large, John Powers, has returned from the 57th Cannes Film Festival, which is held each year on the French Riviera. It's the place to scout new movies from around the world. The head of the jury this year was Quentin Tarantino. The top prize, the Palme d'Or, was given to Michael Moore for his controversial anti-Bush documentary, Fahrenheit 9/11. We invited John to talk with us about Cannes. John is also deputy editor and media columnist for LA Weekly and author of the forthcoming book, Sore Winners, about popular culture during the presidency of George W. Bush. I asked John to describe Michael Moore's new film and the controversy around it.
The film is controversial because, unlike Michael Moore's previous film, this is an overtly political film with a particular political agenda, and that agenda is to defeat George Bush in the year 2004. You know, if you look at a film like Bowling for Columbine, you could say that it was an essay about American violence. But when you see Fahrenheit 9/11, the entire point of the film is to suggest that, one, George Bush was not legitimately elected as president. Second, that he is connected to the Saudi families that are Saudi families and the Saudi elite that is linked to 9/11, and that he then led the United States into an Iraq war that's a disaster. And along the way, the entire burden of the film, emotionally, is to basically be the anti-Bush narrative that I guess would be the response to the pro-Bush campaign that you see on television.
What are the most interesting or surprising scenes in it?
Well, you know, there are some very funny scenes. You know, that I've never been a great fan of Michael Moore, but he can be quite funny. You know, and there, you know, there's a very funny montage at the beginning of the film that simply shows the various spokespeople for the Bush administration preparing to go on TV. So these are satellite feeds of them being made up. And there's a wonderful moment when Paul Wolfowitz, who's always seemed the most intellectual member of the Bush team, taking his comb, sticking it in his mouth, soaking it with saliva, and then using the comb to slick back his hair. It's a startlingly funny sequence. That's a very memorable sequence. The interesting thing for me about the film is that it's much less Michael Moore-like than his previous work. He's not in it very much, and the tone of the film shifts enormously. It starts off very, very jokey with a thing about the 2000 election, with him asking, is it all a bad dream? Was it all a bad dream? And it moves to some very bouncy stuff. But in the second half of the film, he gets to some very interesting and moving stuff about the soldiers fighting in Iraq.
Was this film controversial at the Cannes Film Festival?
No, actually, I think one of the problems with the Cannes Film Festival is that it was so uncontroversial that it was slightly eerie. I mean, after all, this is a film that's suggesting that basically, the president of the United States is a bum. And if you were to show such a film in the United States, you could count on a huge part of the audience to actually have major reservations or doubts about it. Whereas in Europe, but particularly in Cannes, it was received rapturously. It received a 20-minute standing ovation. And Michael Moore's status in Europe is something that maybe Americans don't quite understand, which is he is sort of cross between Mark Twain and Che Guevara, you know, where, in fact, there was a strike on the striking workers on the streets of Cannes on the first Saturday of the festival were complaining about various issues, and they marched down La Croisette, which is the big walk along the beach in Cannes, shrieking the name Michael Moore, Michael Moore, Michael Moore. You know, nothing like that would actually happen in the United States, but in Europe, he's taken to be the one person who tells the truth.
John, you were pretty critical of Michael Moore's previous film, Bowling for Columbine, about the gun industry and violence in America. What do you think of this new movie?
I actually preferred Fahrenheit 9/11 to Bowling for Columbine. You know, not so much for its political reasons, but because I actually felt that it avoided a lot of the cheap shot stuff that Michael Moore drives me crazy by doing. You know, in Fahrenheit 9/11, when he talks to ordinary people, for the first time ever in his work, he doesn't make fun of them. You know, when he doesn't put people on camera just to make them look bad, nor, on the other hand, does he put himself on the camera just to make himself look good. You know, one of the things that I was most annoyed by in Bowling for Columbine was this ghastly montage of basically all the evil things the United States had done in history building to the attack on the World Trade Center while Louis Armstrong sang "Wonderful World." And I thought that was the most ahistorical, dishonest, and cheap thing I could imagine seeing. Although there are clearly polemical points in Fahrenheit 9/11, there's nothing quite like that. You know, you don't actually see him doing really nasty things where you feel he set somebody up just to get them.
So, you know, in America, Michael Moore's movie has been getting a lot of attention because Disney has refused to allow its company Miramax from distributing the film. So, you know, to a lot of people, this looks like censorship. What's the story? Do you know any of the behind-the-scenes stuff about this Disney-Miramax deal?
Well, I think the real story is that there are a lot of people who would distribute Fahrenheit 9/11. But in the case of most films, and including the case of Michael Moore's films, you know, the real question is money. You know, I mean, I know film distributors who would happily show the film, but they can't offer Miramax and Moore what they want in order to distribute the film. The film costs a certain amount of money to make and can be counted on to make a certain amount of money. And so if you're making the film deal, you want to make sure you get the best deal. So they're wheeling and dealing even as we speak, no doubt. But there's no risk at all, Moore himself said this, that the film won't actually be shown in the United States. Occasionally, Moore would like to hint that the United States won't show the film. But when asked directly about it at a press conference in Cannes, he said, of course it will be shown. I mean, in this case, it purely comes down to money. And if I may just add parenthetically, at a time where the American liberal and left doesn't have many stars, the stars they do have are often entertainers, like Michael Moore or Arianna Huffington or some of the movie stars you see at protest marches. And so you have this strange thing where he's playing it two ways at once. On the one hand, he clearly is a committed person of the left who believes what he's saying. On the other hand, he's a businessman who has made himself the professional working class hero. And he's actually juggling both of those in making the deal for the movie. And depending on who he's talking to, you get one or the other. In Europe, Europeans have very little idea that Michael Moore's books are almost inescapable, that you can hardly turn on the TV without seeing Michael Moore. I've actually had very sweet Europeans say to me, do they allow his books to be shown, to be sold? Have you ever seen him on television? And of course, Americans are thinking, my gosh, we see him every single minute of the day. You know, and that's part of his skill at playing the victim. If I could add a second parenthesis to that, is that he has actually done some of the same things that you occasionally get on the right, where the right has claimed that their point of view is never represented. So there's that kind of weird thing where both the left and the right now are both claiming that their stuff is never being allowed to be expressed in public. Whereas, in fact, if you go to any bookstore, you can't avoid Bill O'Reilly or Sean Hannity or Michael Moore.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the Cannes Film Festival. My guest is Fresh Air critic at large, John Powers, who also writes the media column for LA Weekly, and he's the author of the forthcoming book, Sore Winners. The Cannes Festival jury this year was headed by Quentin Tarantino, whose latest film, Kill Bill, opened not too long ago in American theaters, and his film, Pulp Fiction, won the top prize at Cannes in, I think it was 1994. What's he treated like at Cannes?
Oh, Quentin Tarantino is a god in Cannes. Mm-hmm. You know, much of the festival seemed to be geared around making him happy. You know, that there were films in competition, for example, a Korean action film, which finished second at the festival, that probably never would have been in the competition, except for the desire to please Quentin. Quentin was a fan of Mr. Park, the Korean filmmaker, and liked that kind of thing. And I'm sure they felt they didn't want the competition to be filled with too many films that were just arty. You know, they wanted something that Quentin would like. And if you were there, he was inescapable. You know, you'd see him on TV talking in his distinctively Tarantino-esque way about how he loves all kinds of movies, all right. You know, or you'd see the photos from the parties where he was there having a great time outside the big Palais. You could buy Kill Bill t-shirts. Every magazine had him on the cover. I mean, it was a Tarantino fest.
What were some of the other award winners?
Well, it actually was the strangest set of award winners I've ever seen at the festival. You know, I mean, I'm a great fan of Tarantino's filmmaking, so I feel that I can say this without seeming nasty, which is that Tarantino has enormous talent and almost no taste. You know, if you talk to him, you realize that there's almost not a movie bad enough that he won't find something to like. And when you look at the awards that his jury gave, they seemed almost random. You know, for example, there's usually a thing called the Special Jury Prize, where the jury chooses something out of the ordinary to honor because it's either weird or strange. And that gives that film a big break internationally. This year, there were two of them. One was to Irma P. Hall, the African-American actress who was in The Lady Killers. And one was to a gay experimental Thai film called Tropical Malady, which I actually liked very much. But the effect of that was to put these two, basically to put an apple and an orange next to one another, and everyone thought that it didn't help either of them. It was just as though you had thought, oh, I like that, and I like that. Let's put the two of them together. And a great many of the choices were either that or things that were frankly not very good. You know, the Best Director Award went to this French director, Tony Gatliff, who for years and years has been making essentially the same movie about gypsies that nobody very much likes. Okay, finally he won Cannes. No one thought the film was very good. Even his fans didn't think the film was very good, yet it won. Probably there was only one or two awards in the entire festival that people thought were deserved. There was a screenwriting award for this French comedy called Look at Me by a woman named Agnès Jaoui, who's a very gifted French filmmaker who is essentially copying a Woody Allen movie. It was probably everybody's favorite film of the festival. You know, if you'd polled everyone in Cannes and said, which film, be honest now, did you really like the most? That was the film. And it won the best screenplay, and it probably was the best screenplay. But other than that, you know, the idea that the Korean action film was the second best film was a joke. There's even a way in which the Michael Moore film being named the best film is something of a joke. It may have been the most important film. It was the most exciting film. It was the film that had people the revved up the most. And it was the film of the moment. But it probably wasn't the best film.
What got the worst reaction? Was anything booed?
There were fewer boos than usual. You know, I mean, one of the interesting things that's happened at Cannes is that for a great many years, you would always see films by big-name international auteurs. And they would come in, and people had such high expectations that when the films weren't good, they would often boo them because you actually felt as if you were booing some big-time person who'd let you down. But this year, there were a lot fewer big-name auteurs at the festival. and so actually the audience was sort of sweeter and kinder because, you know, you'd feel really bad having a crowd, an entire crowd, boo a little-known Thai director who was getting the big break of his life.
I mean, I see your point.
there's a very, very good film, a sort of very sedate, very sly Almodovar-like film by an Argentine woman named Lucretia Martel that, in fact, was sort of typical of what was good about the festival. Here is a person who 2 or 3 years ago probably wouldn't have been in the competition because there would have been some bad Bernardo Bertolucci film that got the slot because he was famous and she wasn't. This year, a lot of the slots were filled by people who'd never been there before. And what was interesting was it made for a much sweeter festival. You know, people thought, oh, let's give these people a chance.
It sounds like there wasn't a lot of star power there. Maybe that's why Michael Moore was such the big star.
I think they always drag a lot of stars through Cannes, you know, so that Tom Hanks was there, you know, but Tom Hanks was there for The Lady Killers, which at least by American standards was a film that nobody had liked very much. There wasn't the huge star thing, although every day, you know, Sean Penn would arrive. But then he was in a very, very bad film called The Assassination of Richard Nixon. You know, the biggest star vehicle, really, was a Hong Kong film called 2046, made by the Hong Kong director Wong Kar-wai, which starred this extraordinarily great Hong Kong actor named Tony Leung, who I think may be, at the moment, the greatest movie star in the world. And he was cast alongside basically every beautiful woman in Asia. You know, if you wanted Gong Li was there. If you wanted Zhang Ziyi, who was the young woman in Crouching Tiger and Hidden Dragon, she was there. If you wanted, you know, the hottest Hong Kong pop star, Fei Wong, she was there. It was a film just filled with beautiful people and beautiful things. And it became the festival's great scandal because for the first time ever at Cannes, a film didn't show up on time to show at its screening time. So they had to rearrange the schedule, which I think for Cannes veterans, you know, was an outrage because somehow it had violated the decorum. So although it may have been the best film of the festival, it certainly deserved awards. It got absolutely nothing. And everyone I talked to said it was clear that a point was being made, you know, that Cannes was drawing the line with international auteurs, which is if you actually make us change our schedule on Wednesday night when your film's supposed to show on Thursday morning, we will make you pay.
Did you like the film?
I like the film very much. It is basically a sequel to the film In the Mood for Love, which came out 2 or 3 years ago, and it makes that film feel like a bit of an appetizer. It's a sort of a rich, voluptuous, romantic, sexual, funny film about a writer who basically yearns for a lost love and so treats all the women around him very, very badly. Okay, but he does it in the kind of way that I think maybe actually a lot of women know, which is that he has a sweet smile, he's very charming, he's fun, and it's only after he's put the stiletto in you that you realize that he's not a good guy. So as you watch the film, there's wonderful sequences between the actor Tony Leung and Zhang Ziyi, where you watch him seduce her, win her over, you watch her fall in love with him, and he's charming and wonderful. He's like, you know, he looks here a bit like Clark Gable, and you're so won over by him, yet you know that it's going to end badly because in fact he's a cad. And I mean, it's one of those films that actually really captures some psychological truth about the relationship between men and women, and also one of the truths about the way that a great many people in their romantic lives are always pursuing some ideal that they don't quite live up to, and then making the person who doesn't live up to that ideal pay.
John, are there certain films that you think, if not for Cannes, they really wouldn't get the distribution they need, and maybe we never would get to see them in the United States?
I think actually one of the films that shows Cannes at its best was a film that sounds like, I think, the worst date movie of all time. When I describe it to you, you'll probably gasp, which was, it's a film about genital mutilation made by an 82-year-old Senegalese director named Ousmane Sembène, who may be the most famous director in Africa. And it was a film that I think every single person I knew sort of went into with more dread and, you know, trepidation than any film imaginable. And it turned out to be a completely wonderful film, which was about this group of women standing up against their village's tradition of genital mutilation. But the film is great because it actually gives you an almost novelistic sense of all the characters in the town. I mean, in a way, it's like a classic Hollywood movie or a great French movie, where it gives you the world of this and actually shows the world getting better because the women do triumph. You know, so that you're watching this film, you go and you're thinking, oh, no, I don't want to see a film about genital mutilation. And you leave, and everybody it was almost exuberant. You know, I mean, a friend of mine, you know, joked that you could actually imagine the Broadway musical with Queen Latifah. You know, because somehow it actually takes you through this journey, good triumphs over evil, and it's the kind of good that everyone knows is good. And at the same time, the film's so smart and rooted in village life that you actually feel like you've learned something. And so, like, you know, that's the kind of film that might get a distributor out of Cannes, whereas if it played anywhere else, it would simply wind up in some, you know, playing on 16mm in African studies courses at universities.
Okay. Thanks a lot for talking with us, John.
Thank you.
John Powers is critic at large for Fresh Air, deputy editor and media columnist for LA Weekly, and author of the forthcoming book, Sore Winners, about popular culture during the presidency of George W. Bush.